Methodology Minutes is brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences.
Hello again. We are back with Stephanie Lanza and Bethany Bray to talk again about a latent class analysis. Bethany, Stephanie, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Aaron. Glad to be back.
If people are looking for an introduction to latent class analysis, they should really try the first podcast we recorded, because we're going a little further down the rabbit hole today. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. We're going to talk a little bit about extensions to LCA and then talk about some fairly advanced topics that we've been conducting research on.
That's right. We like to be in the rabbit hole, so to speak.
So let's jump right in. What are the most common and useful extensions to latent class analysis?
The two things that people are most likely to start off with once they have a latent class model is to add either a grouping variable or a covariate, or perhaps both, to that what we would think of as a baseline latent class analysis or a baseline LCA. So a grouping variable would be something like gender. So let's say that we started off with a latent class model of sexual risk behavior. Maybe we asked participants questions about how many dating partners they had, how many sexual partners they had, and whether or not they used a condom 100% of the time. And we identified five latent classes of sexual risk behavior from those indicators. Let's say we have non-daters, daters, monogamous individuals, multi-partner safe individuals who have sex with multiple partners but use a condom 100% of the time, and then multi-partner exposed individuals who have sex with multiple partners but don't use a condom 100% of the time. Well, once we have that baseline LCA model with those five latent classes, perhaps we want to ask the question, do men and women have the same structure of those latent classes? So do multi-partner exposed females look the same in terms of their measurement structure as multi-partner exposed males? So that would be using a grouping variable to examine measurement invariance. If it turns out that indeed our latent classes are measurement invariance, which is a good thing, typically that's what we want, what that means is that those five latent classes for women look the same as the five latent classes for men. And we can move on to answer questions like, are the prevalence rates of those five classes the same for men and women? So are men more likely to be multi-partner safe compared to women who might be more likely to be monogamous, for example? And Stephanie has a paper that maybe you could tell us about that addresses this question, right?
Sure. I have a paper with Linda Collins that appeared in Developmental Psychology, so you can download that from our website. The paper investigated just what Bethany was talking about, looking at one of the parts of it was to look at gender differences in the prevalence of membership in these sexual risk behavior latent classes. And we found that males and females, these are adolescents, late adolescents, they were equally likely to be non-daters and daters, but we found that women were twice as likely to be monogamous compared to males. Males were twice as likely to be multi-partner safe individuals compared to females. So they were, both of those categories have some potential for risk, but not super risky. But the multi-partner exposed latent class, the high-risk latent class, was equally prevalent for males and females.
And so once we're able to ask these questions about grouping variables, maybe, or alternatively, we're interested in asking something about covariates, which allow us to predict membership in those latent classes. So if we think about heavy episodic drinking or binge drinking, maybe we want to use that binge drinking variable to predict which latent classes people belong to. So for example, are people who binge drink more likely to be in that high-risk multi-partner exposed latent class compared to another latent class relative to the people who did not binge drink at that time? And I believe that's also investigated in that paper. Is that right?
That's right. That's exactly what we found, Bethany. We found that, to be clear, the question we were answering with this analysis right here is, how does past year binge drinking predict membership in your sexual risk behavior latent class? And past year drunkenness increased your odds of being in the multi-partner exposed at high risk behavior class compared to being a non-dater more than eightfold for adolescents. Yeah. So it's a big risk factor for sexual risk behavior.
And as in the case in this paper, so we talked a little bit about the results for males versus females, and then the relationship between binge drinking and sexual risk behavior, but we might want to ask more sophisticated questions about moderation. So is that relationship between binge drinking and sexual risk behavior different for males and females? And that's a fairly straightforward extension. All you need to do is include both a grouping variable and a covariate into your model, and that allows you to look at this moderation of the relationship between the covariate and the latent class variable, which I think you also did in that paper, right?
We did. You're right. It's exactly that. It's essentially allowing the covariate and the grouping variable to interact in the prediction model. And in this case, that role of heavy drinking, past year heavy drinking, it was really identical for the male and female adolescents. That behavior placed them at equal risk.
Thank you very much. Another topic that Methodology Center researchers have done a lot of work on is latent transition analysis, another longitudinal extension of LCA. Could you talk to us about that?
Well, let me just give a little bit of history here. So Linda Collins is our director of the Methodology Center, and she came to Penn State in, I believe it was 1994, to direct, or shortly after that, after her arrival, she began directing the Methodology Center here. She brought with her methodological innovations, which were basically latent transition analysis as we know it today. She developed this technique for examining shifting latent class membership over time.
The purpose of latent transition analysis, to put it simply, is that you're interested in examining development as movement between these discrete states. So if we start with latent class analysis, LCA, at a single time, and we identify these classes, maybe what we want to know is how do people move between classes over time. So if we start in high school and we identify these five sexual risk behavior statuses, how do people move from a comparatively low risk status, maybe non-dating or dating, into a comparatively high risk status, something like multi-partner exposed? So how likely are participants to make those transitions? And those are the kinds of questions you can address with latent transition analysis or LTA. And LTA is something that was also investigated in this Lands and Collins 2008 paper in developmental psych. They were primarily interested in this question of how likely are participants to move between the statuses over time.
Right. We looked at adolescents across three subsequent years. So at time one, and these were throughout high school and into emerging adulthood. And from time one to time two, and also from time two to time three, we estimated their shifts in behavior, their changes in behavior over time in terms of their sexual risk behavior. And one interesting finding that this paper shows is that the individuals, the adolescents who are most likely, who are most at risk for transitioning to high-risk behavior at the next time point, were not the multi-partner safe individuals. They were the monogamous individuals. So those are potential targets for intervention to prevent them from transitioning to that high-risk status.
And so once we look at questions like that, who is most likely to make these risky transitions, for example, maybe we want to go one step further and examine grouping variables and covariates that can help us better understand who is making those transitions. So this is conceptually similar to what we do in LCA. In the same way, we can add grouping variables and covariates to LTA. So in that case, just like in LCA, if we add a grouping variable, we can examine things like measurement and variance over time. So do men and women have the same statuses across time? And once we establish whether or not that's true, we can look at whether or not the prevalences are different over time, maybe several time points. And we can also incorporate covariates, just like in LCA, to predict latent status or latent class membership at time one. So we were talking before about using binge drinking to predict sexual risk behavior at a single time. Now we can still do that perhaps in high school, so maybe that's time one, but we're interested in transitions from high school to college, let's say. We can now use those covariates not only to predict the high school behavior, but also how those participants are transitioning from high school to college. So is binge drinking associated with certain kinds of transitions? So are people who binge drink and are also non-daters, the ones who are likely to move to multi-partner exposed, or is it another kind of drinker or another kind of person with a different kind of sexual behavior?
I like this model a lot. When you think about predicting transitions, the way Bethany described it is one really, I think, intuitive way to think about it is, does binge drinking predict transitions from this sexual behavior late in class at time one to another sexual risk behavior late in class at time two? And that can be very interesting. Another way to word that question, but it's the same approach, is, does your baseline sexual risk behavior late in class membership moderate the effect of the covariate on that later outcome? And so another way to interpret those effects is thinking about your late in class variable as a baseline late in class moderator, which I think is really cool. And Michael Cleveland and I recently published a paper on this very topic. And before we move on to the next segment, Erin, I wanted to also just make sure that our listeners are aware that we develop software for latent class analysis and latent transition analysis. And so if you go to the website and download Proc LCA and Proc LTA, it's a single download. And what that does is it installs on your computer a suite of two SAS procs, and those become part of your local SAS installation that you can use to fit all of the models that Bethany and I have been talking about.
And the models that we've been talking about up until this point, we've been heavily referencing the 2008 developmental psych paper by Lanz and Collins. And that paper has a fairly extensive appendix that walks you through the programming code for all of the models that we've been talking about here with grouping variables and covariates.
In the context of latent transition analysis, that paper really is about LTA. And if you're interested in the nuts and bolts more about LCA, then I would probably refer people to, there's a 2007 paper we have in structural equation modeling called Proc LCA, and also a Handbook of Psychology book chapter that is in press.
A couple more plugs I'll throw in. There is a reading list for latent class analysis and for latent transition analysis on our website on the latent class analysis research area page. Also, all of the functionality that's available in Proc LCA, we will soon be releasing a Stata plugin that incorporates all that functionality
That's right.
So, for non-SAS users. As interesting and as excited as you are in that work, I know that every researcher wants to talk about what they've been doing recently. So, I know both of you have been working on several extensions of LCA recently. Would you like to talk about some of those?
Yes, we would. We're very excited to tell you about what we've been working on. And before we get started, just as a preview, we're going to talk about two or three different topics, and all of this work is out now or coming out very shortly. So you can visit the website for the references for all these papers, and we'll try to make note of them so you can match them up.
Right. So many of our listeners might be aware that our center is funded by a NIDA P50 center grant. And one of the components in our center currently is being led by Donna Kaufman, who is working in the area of causal inference, and in particular, propensity score methods to causal inference problems. And I am the principal investigator of a component on mixture models, and we focus primarily on extensions of latent class analysis. Donna and I, and along with Bethany, who's interested in both areas, have been very excited to be collaborating on the intersection of these two areas. So the first area I wanted to talk about today is the intersection of causal inference methods and latent class analysis. Questions that people want to answer in latent class analysis is, who's in these classes? What predicts membership in these latent classes? But we can take it one step further with new methods and talk about, what are the actual determinants of latent class membership? So what early exposures might determine what latent class you subsequently end up in, be it a problem behavior latent class, a sexual behavior latent class, dependence latent class, or anything. So the question that we decided to address empirically in the paper where we lay out this method for the first time of what is the causal effect of enrolling in college where binge drinking is so notorious and heavy, what is the ultimately the causal effect of going to college on their subsequent problematic substance use. So after they're out of college and they're entering early adulthood, what is the link that leads people from college enrollment into problematic behavior or less problematic behavior? And we don't know the answer to that question. the golden standard to get at what's the causal effect of going to college on their later drinking or problem behavior is a randomized trial. So you can imagine, you know, scientists, intervention scientists might want to say, let's randomize all the individuals in high school and you guys go to college and you guys don't go to college, and then we'll compare your adult drinking behaviors. Okay, that's never going to fly. We can't randomize people to go to college. In fact, there's huge selection effects related to going to college, maternal education, household income, expectations for your future, education attainment, all sorts of things. So propensity scores provide one avenue for answering these questions. What we did was we used two propensity score techniques in this paper. We used inverse propensity weights, and we also investigated using matching. And we did that to adjust for all sorts of confounders that might confound that estimated association between college enrollment and later substance use behaviors. One of the things that propensity score techniques in general give us the ability to do is to make a very specific causal question that we want to answer. And we thought that the question to answer here that made the most sense, that had the best, most practical implications, was for individuals who actually went to college, what did the act of going to college do for them? Because we know it doesn't make any sense to think about every individual in the population actually going to college, because that's just not possible in our society. So among those who went to college, what did the effect of college do? And because we have the non-college comparison group, we can use propensity scores to balance these two groups on all sorts of confounding characteristics and get our causal answer. And at the end of the day, drum roll, is that there was no causal effect of college enrollment on adult substance use latent class membership, meaning college was neither protective for future behavior, nor was it a detriment to their later problems. So anyway, we're continuing to work in this area. We're very excited about it.
That's not the only thing you guys have up your sleeve. What else?
So what Stephanie's been talking about is this causal prediction from a covariate to latent class membership. In addition to our work investigating causal inference methods on the prediction of latent class membership from a covariate, we've also been investigating questions about how to take a latent class variable and use that to then predict outcomes in the future. So moving from the covariate predicting latent class membership to now using that latent class membership as a predictor. And doing this or wanting to do this has been around for a long time. It makes a lot of conceptual sense. So for example, we might want to take latent classes of depression and predict future alcohol use. But how to do this is not a straightforward methodological question. As Stephanie mentioned earlier, we've understood the model of latent class analysis with covariates for some time, but the mathematical model for how to take an unknown latent class membership and use that to predict a distal outcome is somewhat more challenging. The common approach to doing this would be something that we call a classify-analyze approach, using either maximum probability assignment or something called pseudo-class draws. In either approach, what you do is you hard assign individuals to latent classes. So we would take people's responses, all the participants in our study, and based on their responses, we would assign them to belong to one of five latent classes of depression, for example. And then you would take that latent class membership and you would treat it as known in some larger analysis model. So in this case, if we do indeed want to use latent class membership of depression to predict future alcohol use, what we would do is we would assign people to depression latent classes, and then we would regress their alcohol use on that latent class membership treated as known. For a long time, it's been known that doing that is not ideal for a variety of reasons. One of those reasons is that we no longer make use of that latent class measurement model, which is an advantage to latent class analysis, but also that assigning people to latent classes and then relating that latent class membership to distal outcomes attenuates the association between depression and alcohol use in this case. So, for example, perhaps the people who are most depressed are also the heaviest alcohol users. If we assign people to depression latent classes and then regress alcohol use on the depression latent class membership, we're going to underestimate the alcohol use of people who are most depressed. And that's problematic because the stronger the association between latent class membership and that distal outcome, the worse this approach performs.
Yeah, it's ironic, but
yeah, it's ironic. The better the situation you're in, which is that you want your class membership to be highly related, the worse job you actually do. So we've approached this problem from two different angles. One angle is to try to improve this classify-analyze technique, and we've done some work in that area. We have a tech report that just recently came out by Bray, Lanza, and Tan from 2012. It's tech report number 1218 if you're interested. And it looks at an alternative approach to this classify-analyze that makes use of a more inclusive model that reduces that attenuation. So it's a highly general approach when classify-analyze is something that the scientist needs to do. It tries to improve that methodology. The other direction that we've gone, which is very interesting, is this idea of a model-based approach to the problem. So what do I mean by that? With latent class analysis with covariates, we have what we think of as a model-based solution. That is, we can directly incorporate the covariate right into the latent class model, and we don't need to hard assign people to classes. We wanted a similar solution to be able to do that with LCA, latent class analysis with a distal outcome. There's a paper that's in press at Structural Equation Modeling right now by Lanza, Tan, and Bray. It's coming out in the next month or so, that walks people through what we came up with as a model-based solution. And this is really cool because it doesn't require assigning people to classes in order to predict that distal outcome. How does it work? So let's say that we are interested in this question that I've been talking about. How does depression latent class membership predict alcohol use? Well, in order to answer that question, what we really want to know, the mathematical question we're asking is, what is the distribution of alcohol use given depression latent class membership? And that question is hard to answer because we don't know people's depression latent class membership. Well, by using Bayes' theorem, we can slightly alter that question to make it answerable.
So Bayes' theorem provides the key to this problem, right, Bethany? So we want to know the distribution of alcohol use given depression latent class membership. And you can express that association as a function of three other parameters, sets of parameters that we do know or can get. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We can get the overall distribution of depression by simply fitting a latent class model. We can also get the distribution of depression given alcohol use by using latent class analysis with covariates, because that's what it produces, latent class membership conditional on the covariate of alcohol use in this case. And those two pieces of information are critical. And the third piece of information that we would need to get the distribution that we want is the overall distribution of alcohol use in the population. That's the piece that's a little bit trickier. If we have a binary variable or a count variable, for example, we can take the direct empirical distribution in our sample to produce that. But if our distal outcome of interest is continuous, that becomes a little bit more difficult, particularly if it's continuous but not normally distributed. So to get that last piece of information to put all of this together using Bayes' theorem, what we did was use a kernel density estimation approach. And all the kernel density estimation approach does is it estimates the empirical distribution of that variable from the data provided by our participants. So by using these three pieces of information, the overall distribution of depression, the conditional distribution of depression given alcohol use, and the overall distribution of alcohol use, we can recombine that information using Bayes' theorem to produce what we want, which is the conditional distribution of alcohol use given depression, which answers our question of how does depression predict alcohol use.
That's right. It makes some users uncomfortable, I think, to think about having to fit this model where you have to put your outcome in as a covariate to get one piece of the puzzle that Bethany just described, the conditional distribution of latent classes given the distal outcome. It's a little bit weird, but that's just a piece of information that we need. It's a means to the end, which is to actually get parameter estimates that describe the association we want. And their simulation results show that that basically eliminates all of the bias that you would see with a classify-analyze approach, a standard classify-analyze approach.
And from the user's perspective, it sounds a little bit complicated. You have to use these tools and you have to use maybe kernel density estimation. But this is all automated in a macro that is distributed in conjunction with this paper. The macro is called LCA Distal. It's downloadable from the Methodology Center's website. And so all of this goes on behind the scenes, and you just really have to know what your distal outcome is and how to fit a latent class model using the PROC LCA in SAS. And if you can do those things, you can use the macro in a very straightforward way to get the answer that you want, which is depression predicting alcohol use.
And the classify-analyze approach that Bethany alluded to earlier that you can read about in the tech report, it is even easier, I would say, to use. It's
very straightforward.
It's very straightforward for the user. It's a really cool solution to the problem. So I'm very impressed.
Thank you both very much. Over these two podcasts, we've talked about a broad range of topics, from the most basic introduction to LCA to the latest cutting edge in LCA extensions. If a listener was interested in getting training from, I don't know, say the two of you, where would they go to get that training? What's coming up?
Well, the most immediate opportunity is this June. In June 2013, Bethany and I together will be teaching a two-day hands-on, so bring your laptop, bring your data, and we'll be doing an intensive two-day training on latent class analysis. This is part of the Summer Institute series that we've been hosting for many years now, and it is funded by NIDA. So we will be primarily targeting drug abuse and HIV researchers who want to learn LCA to use in their research.
Well, Bethany, Stephanie, thank you very, very much for your time.
Thanks for giving us, thanks for the chance to talk about it.
You have been listening to Methodology Minutes, brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences. This podcast is available on iTunes and at methodology.psu.edu.